today is April 17th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 12:56 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again for today's study. Let's begin, little children, today with the proverb for the day, Proverbs 15, 17, and 18, in the Ward Green version, which reads, "So better a dinner of herbs and with love than barley-fed beef and pure hatred above. A man who is angry is stirring up fire, and quieting contest is one slow to ire." Today's study in the Crucible article is going to be interesting, but we have a very important thing that we learn today in Zechariah chapter 7, which is absolute proof of the date of 587 as the year that Jerusalem was captured and the temple was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And it's remarkable because I didn't notice that scripture in chapter 7 of Zechariah in any of my articles. So it's the absolute proof, as we're going to see, of the chronology as far as that particular one date goes. And we can see it very clearly and easily, and it helps us confirm more about the dating system used by the Medes and Persians also at the same time, provided we already believe that 587 is, of course, the date of Jerusalem's capture and the destruction of the temple. So, let's see, yesterday we did Zechariah 6 and Ezra 2, so today we'll do Ezra 3 and Zechariah 7. And yesterday in the Crucible article, we almost finished the inset of the commentary for Table 4, Chapter 10, Paragraph 3, which is in Part 2 of the Crucible article. So we can read the last part now, the last two paragraphs. From the end of the reign of Assyrian King Ashurdan the First in 1179 BCE, he was the king of Assyria. After 36 years of his rule, the subsequent kings of Assyria, prior to Tiglath-Pileser III, are all 46 years, or nearly, higher than convention, with King Ashurdan III in 817 to 799 BCE, in whose year 9 the eclipse of Bur-Sigali has been believed to have occurred, the date of which is June 13th, 809 BCE, explained by Mr. Jules Oppert in his letter to François Lenormand of 1868 CE, that letter that he wrote. So, going back to our table, just to take to our calculations, 1179. Right. Oh, no. Okay. That's right. Anyway, this 1179 is actually year one of Ashurdan, if I'm not mistaken, but we'll check and see. Is that true? No, that's the end of his reign. That's right. From the end of his reign, 1179. Okay. In the table, it's quite in agreement with that. Wait a minute. That's wrong, isn't it? After. Oh, that's right. Right. Wait a minute. That's strange. It used to be, in the conventional chronology, it's the beginning of his reign. But in our chronology that we have corrected from the conventional chronology, we've rejected the conventional chronology, absolutely. In our chronology, year one of Ashurdan the First is 1225. As we see from this calculation, we still have 27 years per generation. And now his reign ends in 1179. According to our table 4 above in this commentary, above the commentary, from the end of the reign of Assyrian king, okay, after 36 years of rule, which would be, of course, we add 36, we get 1215. 36 plus 1179 is 1215. Little children, you can ask your parents to help you with the arithmetic. The subsequent kings of Assyria prior to Tiglath-Pileser III are all 46 years, or nearly higher than convention. That's the change that we've made. Not all of them are 46 years higher, as we saw in the case of Tukulti-Ninurta I, whose reign was only 11 years higher in our chronology than the conventional date. So they're obviously not all 46 years higher, but certainly we require 46 years as the difference at the time of this eclipse of Bur Sagali, that eclipse, which is a total eclipse in the land of Nineveh, but the capital of Assyria, wherever, or the main city, where it was recorded that it was an eclipse. It was a total eclipse, is what most conventional scholars believed, and that's why they dated it as 763, because this eclipse of 809 is actually an annular eclipse, not a total eclipse, but it's very near total. And therefore, it satisfies all the requirements, and more importantly, it satisfies the chronological requirements much better than the 763 eclipse. Now, between about 790 BCE and 744 BCE, that's the time period that was in question, the area of Assyria was headed by a Chaldean king, the one called Pul, P-U-L. 2 Kings 15 and 19. From the start of Tiglath-Pileser III in 744, the Assyrian kings continue, according to our article, Moses, true to the Bible word, i.e., Samaria fell. Hezekiah year 6, 719, which is 719 BCE, year 6 of Hezekiah, whose year 1 was what? 725, right? It looks like 725 minus 6 is 719. So it looks like that is very plausible, and we have already shown it to be true in our other articles, and we're going to be studying it, I think, even in this article later on. I think we will. I've been reading ahead. Now, Sennacherib, in chapter 10 now, paragraph 4, we're going to see a very important thing here. In quotes, after 418 years, end quote, this is what Sennacherib wrote, those words. And he also wrote that he brought back to Assyria the idol gods, quote, Rimmon and Selah, end quote, stolen by some, quote, king of Akkad, end quote, called, quote, Marduk Nadin Aki, end quote, in the time of, quote, unquote, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, in the, quote, unquote, Babian inscription. In table 4, the reign of Marduk Nadin Aki is highlighted in light green, along with that of Tiglath-Pileser I. Their reigns have an overlap at about the years 1131 to 1122. This is so very important. 1131 to 1122, we see the overlap between these two kings. Marduk-Nadin-Ahi, Tiglath-Pileser I. There's the overlap, 1131 to 1122. They overlap. That's a 9-year or 10-year period. And we see, continuing our reading of this paragraph 10.4 in the Crucible Part 2, the Baleno cylinder clearly states that King Sennacherib early in his reign, perhaps his accession year, conquered Babylon, Professor Maspero dating the conquest to 704 BCE. So if we take that 704, add 418, according to the time that Sennacherib himself gave, the number of years, 418, we reach 1122 BCE. 7 plus 400 is 1100, and 4 plus 18 is 22. 1122 BCE. And that was year 10 of Marduk-Nadin-Ahi, when we look at not only table 4, but this eclipse. In 1124, 2 years before 1122, in the overlap period, we see it goes directly over Babylon, and that was the city of which Marduk-Nadin-Ahi was king. It's a perfect, a total eclipse. May 18th, 1124 BCE. And when we know that, we can read on here in our paragraph 10.4, the correctness of the date 1131 BCE given in table 4 for the accession of King Marduk-Nadin-Ahi of Babylon is strongly demonstrated by the Kuduru, designated BM 90840, precisely dated Elul 28, year 10 of King Marduk-Nadin-Ahi. That was the date when this boundary stone was inscribed, described in the inset on the right here, called British Museum 90840. And it had to do with the 28th day of the month Elul in the 10th year of Marduk-Nadin-Ahi, king of Babylon, which was the time when the son of the king of Babylon, who has defeated Assyria, in verse or line 28 that's mentioned there in column 2, I guess it is. If you read down, it's going to be column 2, yes. If we go back to read it as the beginning of that series, it's column 2, line 28. There was a defeat of Assyria, therefore, in year 10 of this king, Marduk-Nadin-Ahi, as is well established by this Kuduru, this boundary stone. Okay? It was a year which we arrived at. We're going to read on about this tomorrow, so we're the next day and so forth. But there was more to be said about it. But the fact that this eclipse occurs 2 years before the boundary stone is going to be seen as very strong evidence that that's the correct dating for this event. Okay? That's what this evidence is going to show us. It's remarkable. Okay, I just, perhaps I can adjust this. I got ahead of myself because I didn't prepare the study yet in this. I prepared it in a different format, not on the computer, and I don't have it prepared on the computer, but it's okay. But I want to make sure I align this correctly with where I know it should be aligned. There we go. So we have finished that now for today, the Crucible article. But that eclipse was only a very short period of time, some 2 years before this battle, in year 10 of Marduk-Nadin-Ahi. And as we will see later in our study, eclipses were omens, and they determined whether a major king, in this case Babylon's king, they determined, these eclipses were omens that determined whether a king would go to battle or not, provided there were also scanty rains at the time. After the eclipse, if there wasn't much rain falling as well, that was an omen that would indicate that the king would go to battle. Of course, I guess it was difficult to go to battle if there was a lot of rain, because they couldn't travel in muddy conditions. But today's, we've done our daily scripture, so we're kind of going well along here. But Ezra chapter 3 now, I want to reserve some time to discuss Zechariah because it's so monumentally important for the absolute chronology. But Ezra chapter 3 is, I believe, fairly short. But we also need to discuss a little bit about this, too, because the year in which it occurred, we said, was probably 538. Since most people who studied the successful conquest of Babylon by Cyrus, the king of Persia, in 539 BCE, know that it was later in the year, or, you know, late summer or later than that, when Cyrus conquered Babylon in 539. I forget the exact time period. I guess we should look it up. But when did Cyrus conquer Babylon? I just believe, from my memory, if it serves me, it was later, September or something. But even if this is not correct, it's not going to matter that much. But I believe it was sometime later in August, you know, maybe July, August, September, maybe even October, when Cyrus conquered Babylon. Are we going to look it up? When did Cyrus conquer Babylon? How do we look that up in the most effective way? Maybe here? If we go here? Yeah, I think we can do it. Cyrus conquered Babylon. Conquest Babylon. Let's see what we get. When did it fall? Fall of Babylon? October 539. That's when it was. October 539, when Babylon fell. So that's what we have. It is late in the year 539. So year one of Cyrus, we were saying that year one of Cyrus is probably 538. And that is because we assume that the Medes and Persians used the accession year system, which meant that Cyrus year 1 would begin the next spring in 538. And therefore, if he announced the Jews' release right at the beginning of his official reign in March or April of 538 BCE, the Jews would likely return by the 7th month, which would be September, October of the year 538, unless we are willing to believe that they waited longer than those months, 7 months, you know, to actually a year and 7 months, in other words, if we're willing to believe that it took them that long to prepare and return, then it could have been 537, but otherwise it looks like it's 538, especially since the first year of Cyrus may have in fact meant the year that preceded, you know, the fall of 539. It could have meant October 539 is what it could have meant. Now, we were saying in the Born and Raised Messiah article, for good reason, that any king who was a foreign king was considered as having begun to rule when he took the throne, not the next springtime or the next vernal equinox. We assumed that it was not necessary for a country to, like the Jewish people, Israel, to know what the official year one was of a foreign leader. But since in this case, the sons of Israel, of course, are serving under Cyrus, they don't have their own kingship at this time, there's no need to believe in this case that they used anything other than the accession year system. Okay, so that's the assumption here. We're going to find that to be useful when we talk about Zechariah. When the 7th month arrived, the sons of Israel were in their cities. And the people began to gather themselves as one man to Jerusalem. The 7th month of the year they returned, which could have been 538, most likely was 538. And Jeshua, the son of Jehozadak, and his brothers, the priests, and Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and his brothers, proceeded to rise up and build the altar of the God of Israel, to offer up burnt sacrifices upon it according to what is written in the law of Moses, the man of the true God. So they established the altar firmly upon its own site. Yes, I better shut down certain applications which could interrupt our efforts. There we go. So they established the altar firmly upon its own site. That was the first thing they did before they even built the temple. For fright came upon them because of the peoples of the lands, and they began offering up burnt sacrifices to Yahweh upon it, the burnt sacrifices of the morning and of the evening. Then they held the festival of booths, according to what is written, with the burnt sacrifices day by day in number, according to the rule of what was due each day. And afterward, there was the constant burnt offering. Feel my lips a little bit parched here, chapped. If I don't treat them, they're going to be cracked, possibly here. There we go. That's good. I need a Kleenex. That is very oily. Mainly, the corner of my mouth was the dry area that I was worried about. There, it's starting to crack. Okay. Then they held the festival of booths, right? And afterward, there was the constant burnt offering. And that for the new moons and for all the sanctified festival seasons of Jehovah and for everyone that willingly offered a voluntary offering to Jehovah. From the first day of the seventh month on, they started to offer up burnt sacrifices to Yahweh, when the foundation of Jehovah's temple itself had not yet been laid. And they proceeded to give money to the cutters and to the craftsmen, and eatables and drink and oil to the Sidonians and the Tyrians, to bring cedar timbers from Lebanon to the sea at Joppa, according to the permission granted by Cyrus the king of Persia to them. And in the second year of their coming to the house of the true God at Jerusalem, in the second month, Zerubbabel, this would be the second year now, that would have been after the springtime of 537. Without doubt, it seems. However, the only question that remains is, when was in fact year one of Cyrus? When did it begin precisely? Which fact we are lacking. But Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Jehozadak, and the rest of their brothers, we know it was sometime around 539 or 538 for year one of Cyrus. The priests and the Levites and all those who had come out of the captivity to Jerusalem started, and they now put in positions the Levites, from 20 years of age upward, to act as supervisors over the work of the house of Yahweh. Accordingly, Jeshua, who we know was the high priest, his sons and his brothers, and Kadmiel and his sons, the sons of Judah, stood up as one group to act as supervisors over the doers of the work of the house of the true God. Also the sons of Henadad, their sons and their brothers, the Levites. When the builders laid the foundation of the temple of Jehovah, then the priests in official clothing with the trumpets and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with the cymbals, stood up to praise Jehovah according to the direction of David, the king of Israel, the late David, the king of Israel, who was in the tomb at this point, and they began to respond by praising and giving thanks to Yahweh. Quote, for he is good, for his loving kindness toward Israel is to time indefinite, end quote. As for all the people, they shouted with a loud shout in praising Yahweh over the laying of the foundation of the house of Yahweh. And many of the priests and the Levites and the heads of the paternal houses, the old men that had seen the former house, were weeping with a loud voice at the laying of the foundation of this house before their eyes, while many others were raising the voice in shouting for joy. Hence the people were not distinguishing the sound of the shout of rejoicing from the sound of the weeping of the people. For the people were shouting with a loud shout, and the sound itself was heard, even to a great distance. That's the end of Ezra chapter 3. So we see there were mixed feelings about this temple because the temple of Solomon had been so magnificent. In fact, as we will see from another scripture, maybe we can find a cross-reference right here, actually, if we look for it. The old men were weeping. If we look at the cross-reference for that, X cross-reference, let's see. There it is. It's Haggai 2 and 3, which we read recently. Who is there among you that is remaining over who saw this house in its former glory? And how are you people seeing it now? Is it not in comparison with that as nothing in your eyes? So it was very sad to see the new temple. For the older ones among the people who had seen the former temple, which was built by King Solomon. But this new temple was still a cause for great rejoicing, and the sound of shouting was heard to a great distance, as we saw there. And we better move to Zechariah. We're using our time. Now we've got Zechariah. We've got to go there to chapter 7, so we must go back. Zechariah is the 38th book, it's worth noting, of the Protestant Old Testament, which we've been studying. Furthermore, it came about that in the fourth year of Darius, here we have it, the fourth year of Darius. Now, according to the accession year system, the year one of Darius, who became king in 522, over the kingdom of the Medes and Persians, as it had been ever since Cyrus had conquered the Medes, Darius was the king who began to rule in 522, and he was... We know this was that particular Darius, different from the Darius who was the governor over Babylon after that is immediately following the conquest by Cyrus of Babylon. But this was a different Darius who was ruling from 522 as far as taking the throne in that year, but his official year one would be 521, the springtime. At which time it commenced. So the fourth year would be 3 years plus some months after that, or some days after that 521 springtime, which would be 518. After the springtime of 518, after the first month, which began in March or April of that year, 518, that was the fourth year of Darius. And it was said to be the fourth day of the ninth month, which is October, November. Is it? No, sorry, I should say November, December. Yeah, November, December is the ninth month. Is that right? Because September, October, October, November, November, December. Right. The seventh month is September, October. And the ninth month is November, December. So it's still the year 518. And Bethel proceeded to send Sherezer and Regemelech and his men to soften the face of Jehovah, saying to the priests who belonged to the house of Jehovah of armies, and to the prophets, even saying, quote, shall I weep in the fifth month, practicing an abstinence? The word abstinence means withholding, you know, refraining from doing something. Abstaining from doing it means to not do it. So should they afflict their souls the way I have done these, oh, how many years? Okay. So the number of years we're going to read on and find out how many it was. And the word of Jehovah, verse 4, continued to occur to me, saying, verse 5, say to all the people of the land and to the priests, quote, when you fasted and there was a wailing in the fifth month and in the seventh month, and this for 70 years, did you really fast to me, even me? So verse 5 gives us the absolute date. They did this fasting for 70 years, if we include the year of the conquest by Nebuchadnezzar of Jerusalem. That was 587. Inclusive, 70 years, brings us to 5:18, does it not? Which is 5:17 would be 70 years, non-inclusive or exclusive, but it's 70 years inclusive that would be to the year before 5:17, which was 5:18. 70 years inclusive, they would have been wailing. Did you really fast to me, even me? And when you would eat and when you would drink, were not you the ones doing the eating and were not you the ones doing the drinking? Should you not obey the words that Yahweh called out by means of the former prophets while Jerusalem happened to be inhabited and at ease with her cities all around her? And while the Negev, because the accent is on the letter G, and the Shephelah were inhabited, the Negev is the desert, which means, the word means south, and it's the desert to the south of Israel. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to Zechariah, saying, the Shephelah is the woodlands between the plains of the coastal region and the more mountainous region around Jerusalem. It's, you know, it's the hill. It's a little bit starting to be, I think, a little more hilly than the flatlands. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to Zechariah, saying, this is what Jehovah of armies has said. With true justice do your judging, and carry on with one another loving kindness and mercies, and defraud no widow or fatherless boy, no alien resident or afflicted one, and scheme out nothing bad against one another in your hearts. But they kept refusing. They kept refusing to pay attention, and they kept giving. We're running out of time. They kept giving a stubborn shoulder in their ears. They made unresponsive, too unresponsive to hear. And their heart they set as an emery stone to keep from obeying the law and the words that Jehovah of armies sent by his spirit by means of the former prophets, so that there occurred great indignation on the part of Jehovah of armies. And so it occurred that just as he called and they did not listen, so they would call and I would not listen, Jehovah of armies has said. And I proceeded tempestuously to hurl them throughout all the nations that they had not known, and the land itself has been left desolate behind them, with no one passing through and no one returning. And they proceeded to make the desirable land an object of astonishment. I think I might sneeze here. Let's try to prevent that. But we see there the absolute chronology is confirmed. 70 years inclusive from 587 to 518, which is year 4 of Darius, especially since it's in the 9th month, which means it's after the 5th month when they said they were wailing, because that was the 9th day of the 5th month when the temple was burned, in fact. Yeah, that was the 9th day, according to Jewish tradition, of the 5th month. So we have it understood now. April 17th is the date, the year 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1329 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.